Welcome to Starfleet Universe On-Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run a step online, Fed Common Line, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us with a talk cast every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call us on 605-562-0444, just follow the direct call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com, search for call ID 17702. Or SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call, you'll find us there. But if you want the best online experience, you want to go to twitch.tv at twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you'll find us there. You'll find the chat room, and it will be a lovely, lovely time. And moving on and forward, when it comes to contacting me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my accounts there are SFU on call. Also, Paul Franz, PAUFRNZ, and of course, Franz Games, FRNZGAMES. And if, of course, the lovely Talkcast gets the podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And we'll come to ADB this week. It's all, again, it's very quiet. Moving onward and forward to them, you know, the Orion Master Starship book is still being worked hard by Steve Patrick. Also, this week, I found on the online store, you can go get the Klingon Armada Unity. That's $16.95. The Klingons are coming, and they are loaded for bear. The Media Empires, when it comes to the gaming systems, joins the Starfleet Universe, which is Klingon Armada, which is done by a joint venture of ADB and Majestic 12 Games. And, of course, it's an 86-page rulebook, which contains the essentials of Star Armada rules. So and 46 starships, and complete rules for the Starfleet Universe alive in the Star Armada game system. This is a fast-playing game, easily handles squadrons of ships as they encounter their enemies and battle to see who is indeed the best commander. Ships include, of course, the Federation Dreadnought Battlecruiser, Heavy Battlecruiser, Old Light Cruiser, Command Cruiser, and Frigate. Also, the Klingon Dreadnought, the C7 heavy battle cruiser, the D7 battle cruiser, the D6 heavy cruiser, and of course the D5 war cruiser, the 5 frigate, and of course the most well known ship, the D7C command cruiser. The Zinnies have the Dreadnought battle cruiser and a frigate, and of course the Tholians classic patrol cruiser and the Orion Raider. And of course, there's many other ships in total. It is 46 ships. When it comes to the SFB Online tournament, the Sapphire Star 16 tournament, Jack Taylor has defeated Jeff Clark. Jeff Clark reviewed the game position they had before they restarted the game, and he decided to concede. He did not think he could pull it out, so he conceded before they got back together. Moving on to the library report. We have, of course, we have SFB. We have two ships. One's an update. One's a new one. With the Zinni CVH is the new one, and we have an updated general. General is the race, and that's the FEV. When it comes to FedCom library, no progress there. I still have two ships that are outstanding. And with that, that is the news for this week. That one. Okay. And it's me, one only of Paul Franz, recommending you to Starfleet Universe on call. And tonight we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug. Yar.
And that's it. Me, of course. But quick update for those who did not listen to the news portion. At this point, I think that's Doug and anyone in the chat room. I can't tell how many people are in the chat room. I'm sure there's a way to figure it out. But anyway.
It tells you.
I'm sure it'll tell. I have to figure it out. I'm on my iPad versus on the website.
Don't
worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll figure that out later. It doesn't matter. But anyway, is that not controversial? This quick note, which was Jack Taylor won. We were going over the game a bit last week. Pretty sure last week. Yeah, it was last week. And Jeff Clark basically conceded after looking at da, 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 da. That's exactly what Jeff said. Says Jack. Okay. Okay, there it is. After it says thus, after consideration, I just concede the battle. There's an opportunity, but I doubt the position can be recovered enough for victory. I think there are two choices made that I did not end well for the Romulan. First, on turn three, after the bolt exchange, the Romulan head to pursue was not the interest of the Romulan after all. I should have simply used the last reserve warp to arm the rear extended phaser one, taken whatever internals I could muster, and turn off to rearm. Second, on turn five, I removed too many options to avoid Gorn phaser strike while cloaked. No chance to chain speed, no chance to slip or turn, so that plus good phaser dice yielded too many internals, and thus all the result of the decision to pursue on turn three. So that was the primary mistake. Yeah, and Jack was just mentioning that the Jack thought Jeff's best opportunity to stand in line the bolt the turn. He launched the F and headed away from me. For some favorable dice, it would have been pretty far ahead, and you would have gone with that plan. I wasn't excited about my position when the bolts happened. No matter what I was bolting you on this game, that was the plan from the beginning. I didn't really get to the shot I won, so you won that part of the battle. As you mentioned, after the bolt, I think cloaking hurt you more than it helped. You seemed to have all kinds of power problems and were very hard pressed to keep me off of the down shield or keep my phasers from shooting you every turn. I rolled great, and made a big difference. And I tend to agree with that sentiment, which is it probably would have been better if he would have eschewed the cloaking device and just kept the power for speed and possibly repairing shields so that we wouldn't have to worry about getting those internals as many internals, because then you could reinforce the shield. So Peter was mentioning, yeah. See, as a Gorn, every time I arm an enveloper on turn one against Romulan, inevitably he cloaks out. So I think that was an interesting comment from Peter McKeown, because for those of you who've played the tournament for many, many years, gone actually to Origins, i.e. Columbus, Ohio, Peter, for the longest period of time, played the Zinni. In fact, he has some really worn chits that were his chit, his counters. But he switched to using the Gorn for a long time after that, and so he playing the Gorn a long time after that. He mainly, obviously, he's been focusing on seeking weapon. I forget what else he played. I think he might also play all the others, Hydran, I think, and he got completely blown out. So,
I must
anyhow,
remember Denny.
I wanted to give an update on that before we go on to the better things. Also, one minor thing, because I think I told you guys, I know I said it to myself, which was after I paid off for my computer, because it took me quite a few months to pay off the computer, pay off the credit card, because I hate keeping a balance on the credit card for the business. So I usually, you know, I'll buy like a laptop or some electronic, and then spend the next month just paying that off, and that's the only thing I'm working on. So what I did was that I got, well, all you can see is the box at the moment, but this is this, which is the Steam Deck. No cat. He wants to get in the box. Here, hold on. Ooh. Move that. Here. If you want to get in the box, here. Here. You want the box? You want the box? Well, you know how cats. You can give, buy them these really fancy toys.
Yep.
And they want to play the box. Yep. That the toy came in. And actually, he'll kind of fit in the box, won't you? So, it's, in my mind anyway, it's a way to encourage me to work on getting the online client on the Steam Deck and see if there's anything I can do. I might have to do something pretty drastic. Because my understanding, from what I've done some quick searching online, there's no built-in support for the controls for the handheld, and I would really like to try to get it so that you can actually use the handheld, the handheld display. You don't have to connect up to an external monitor or anything like that to use the Steam Deck and use the client on that. And I need to look into further how that is connected into the system, because I'm assuming that like the Unity engine and the what's the competing engine?
Oh God, I forget.
I want to say Real something. I forget now. It's awful. but the other engine. But basically, I'm sure that they have built-in support for the Steam Deck, at least at this point, because of it's pretty, in my mind, it's pretty popular, especially because what's the biggest game store on the Steam Deck? Steam, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
So I probably have to look at the developer website for Steam Deck to see how that's done. I might have to actually write some C and incorporate that into the JVM and all that kind of thing, and basically write a controller interface for the SMB Online client myself, because I haven't seen any libraries that will support that. Of course, I'm one of those few individuals that are nutty enough to actually run a Java-based program on the Steam Deck, would be my guess. And actually wanted to use a controller, because I can see it, like it is possible to play the online client using just the controllers on the Steam Deck. It just means certain things would have to be, some of the things would have to be, I have to have more controls and so forth. For example, tractors. If someone tractored you, I have to have a display which will help handle the tractoring itself, you know, the whole bidding stuff. Because currently that's completely handled by text, you know, typing into the keyboard. And I don't think you really want to do that. In theory, you could probably get away with it. The tough part would be the entering the first initial tractor order, because I'm not sure how many people have seen this done an online client. But what usually happens is that a person says, "Okay, I'm gonna tractor you for this many points," and then you have a bidding war, the person who's tracking him goes, okay, will go like, okay, one. And the person will say, you would reply with one if you want to fight with one. And then two, okay, then you put in two, denoting that you are,
oh God, yes,
you know, matching it until you either you say, okay, you got me, you know, just denote that, yeah, I can't fight anymore. Or the other player, you know, gives up and says, you know, and he stops, you know, spending energy on the tractor beam. But, you know, because I would think with, in theory, you could do with the EA. I was thinking about it, the tough part would be decimal points, you know, partials, you know, like fractions of a point of energy and how they handle that. Because otherwise, you can just use up down arrows to increase it by one or two and so forth.
Well, here's a question.
Yeah.
Could you do, can you classify some things as just discretionary as a separate class by itself, so that you have, like, say, batteries would be an automatic discretionary spending up to whatever the limit is for the batteries. And when you create reserve warp by spending batteries and putting batteries back into it, then it changes to potentially reserve warp as a discretionary thing. And then you would have a separate category for tractor power, where the tractor power would be discretionary as something you could simply do a drop down menu and start spending at any point in the game.
You mean basically have the actions just a drop down menu?
Well, either a drop down menu or some choice.
Because the thing is that the
like
reserve power is discretionary power. You can use it however you want to.
Right, but say for instance, instead of having a verbal bidding war, it's you've been tractored for one effective of 1 point. You've got, how do you wish to counter this?
Right. Well, that's it. Well, basically, power. That's what I was saying, which is I have to create an actual interface that shows you're being tractored. You want to fight it. And on the other side, for the people who are, a person who's tractoring them, they'll get an interface, they'll get a note that, hey, he's fighting it. Do you want to increase?
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, but that's something I have to add to, if I want to have it so that you're using the handheld and not using text to do what currently is this. I'm just saying that one of that would have to be done.
Well, the challenge is that if you're going to do everything where it's can be used on the Steam Deck like that, then it just sounds like you're going to have to do that with pretty much everything at some point. Because the client is based off of text input from the players, but they're not reactive to each other, whereas this would make it reactive to each other.
Yeah, well, the only reason that a lot of stuff is text is because I have not implemented as an integrated part of the client.
Right. Well, the other thing that hit my head on this was that one of the challenges for you in doing this into that kind of environment is that so much of the game is verbally driven. I'm calling for fire. Do you have anything?
No.
Okay, well, I've got this.
Well, the call for fire is you bring up
or other actions.
Yeah, well, that's already done. The only thing is describing the action. And as I said, for those, I have to add more of an interface too. For firing, we already got an interface. You just select which ones you're going to fire, what your targets are, what mode you're going to be using, and that gets announced. You know, and the client knows what you are doing.
It was just a thought.
Oh, understood. Basically, you're going down the same thing. The thing is, Doug, you're not as familiar with the client as most people use it day in, day out.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a random thought that hit my little brain.
Understood.
My little monkey brain said, hey, what about that?
Understood. Yeah, because I really like to do that. At the very least, obviously, the first start, as denoted by Gary, many, many... double-checking. Many, many moons ago, to get the client onto the Steam Deck, it's best if I create a FLAC pack to install the client. And I've got the laptop over there, which I have by Mac, and also I installed Debian, the Debian release on that one. And so I can do a FLAC pack on that one. As I mentioned before, actually, when it comes to the FLAC pack, is that I'm hoping, really hoping, that I will be able to create a FLAC pack, look at the format of the file, and hopefully update, depending upon what it does, but I might be able to just update it myself on the Mac. Like if it's just basically a zip file or a tarball, just with different extension, which means that might denote that there's files in certain directories and they're structured in a certain way, you know. So I looked at the flat packs a little bit, and you have to describe part of it, and it was frustrating. I looked at it, and there's nothing that really documents the build configuration, you know, how all things are installed and things like that, which was frustrating as all get out. You know, because this field takes these values, and there's all this field, this field, this field, and I couldn't find any documentation on the flat back build configuration. You know, it's like, okay, where is it? So, I'll probably look at them more. I'm sure there's some place, and I'll visit some like IRC channel or Discord server, and go possibly even just a subreddit. And go, okay, where's the good documentation on this stupid format? Because I'm sure there's probably better documentation than I can find. But anyway, after that, because even to get it on the Steam Deck, I have to do that first. And I need to, I'm not sure if the Flatback pack actually has you sign the application, the idea. Is there some kind of security in place to make sure that it hasn't been modified or messed with? Yes. On anyone but the author, you know. So I have to check in on that. What? Excuse me. Local City is by, what is it, you little goofball? What? Yes, your ears are numbing. Okay, I love you, but okay, I'll get back to work here, okay? He's growing. I also have a little kitten. I think I showed you guys this last week. Suki, last week. I forget. But anyway, onward and forward to the Monster Bash. Monster Mash, sorry. Oop. And actually, no, that's the wrong one, isn't it? It's that one I want. I'm assuming I'm showing my screen now. That's weird. Sorry. Okay, Kimbrel. Sorry. I will watch my game. Twitch. I just want to double check and make sure that everything is good. Because I think it's more important at the moment. Okay, make sure that what I'm seeing is the screen. And of course, this week is Banshee. And description, it's actually saying why the year is Y182386. During a 5-year period at the end of the General War, the galaxy was beset by infestation of creatures at the Federation named Banshees. The name came from the strange wailing noise over subsequent communications created by a plasmatic charges of the creatures. By the creatures who migrate in mass hordes, look for sites to build breeding nests, bases of all types for the primary targets, but anything slow-moving and poorly armed was vulnerable. While the Banshees were rare, any unit confronted by them found itself in a pack of trouble. Extremely fast, but relatively easy to kill, the primary problem with Banshees was their numbers. There were so many of them, a given ship would hunt one of them, only to find five more had gotten past the defenses. The fast PS were the perfect defense. So, the setup... Ba-da-ba-ba. Let's look and see how they have set up. Of course, they have a horde. These are hexes. Got six hexes where the horde begins. Die roll. Okay. One horde. And there's on turn one, all different positions. Place three banshees at given hex. Using hexes adjacent to any of the banshees occupied hex. And the map is for extra banshees. The number of banshees is not evenly divided by three. Place one last one or two in a hex. Bubble. So it's pretty generic. Normally they say, okay, fleet. Here it is. Fleet. Defending ships within 6 hexes of the base, speed 4, weapon status 1, fires and PFs of any dock to the base. So they don't actually give you a normal 4. Oh, okay. Forces will depend on the size of the base selected for the scenario. Star base, blah, 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 all the way down to a convoy. So. Minimum number of Banshees is 10. If it's Complat, SAMs, and 125 BPV points. Which, from the sounds of it, if for any of these, given the year, it's best if you choose PFs for the bases.
Well, they literally just said that PFs were the best thing to use against
them. Yeah.
I
think they went on to the 10th inning. Okay. Banshee has a turn motor of 1 and a constant speed of 32. So they're basically like a seeking weapon. Banshees cannot hit. Banshees always move at the end of step 4 of any given impulse. So I'd have to look that up. I'm assuming.
It looks like they can be herded by their movement. And if you have a flight of PFs out, you can make a little wall and deflect them while you're killing them.
Okay, the move is automatic.
They approach an armed ship. There is that.
Understood. Yeah, it can't move one at a time because of condition number 3 and 4. I'll look at that later. but all the such movement is simultaneous. Establish an order of Banshees at the start of the scenario. Always move the Banshees in the same order. Okay. Step number three can cause Banshees to fly their venom. If several Banshees try to enter the same hex or end or fire, these will be resolved one at a time. And if the target is destroyed, other Banshees moving later in will be treated as if the target was not present. Okay. So, yep. Okay, within four hexes of an armed unit, it will attempt to evade that unit. While doing so, it will not violate condition number three, which is, it'll do it. Wow. This makes it difficult. That a Banshee will not involuntarily in a hex within four hexes of an armed victim, or might force it to do so by turn modes and multiple ships. For example, if a ship is in the base hex, the Banshee will turn away and maintain range 5 at the firing ship. If no possible hexel is available, they're still not violating the condition. This condition does not apply, is ignored. Okay, so if it's within four hexes of multiples, it will select which is more than four hexes. Right. If two or more hexes, let's select the closest one to the target. If condition one does not apply, the Banshee will attempt to move toward the base or designated target as a seeking weapon. Okay. Dang, it's a windy night.
Oh, yeah. We had a really heavy rain down here, too.
We never got rain. We just got a lot of wind.
Yeah. Well, it was just a little bit ago. It, like, just downpoured for, like, a few minutes.
Actually, let's check that real fast.
We'll see how it goes.
Which is... Don't mind me. Yeah, right now it's 75% chance of rain, all the way to 50% chance through the morning, and then it's supposed to be very windy.
Okie dokie then. So.
Woohoo!
So basically, they're trying to get to the base, right?
Right. That's the ultimate goal. And they will avoid mobile units as much as possible.
Okay. So take your half dozen PFs and just wagon train the base and let the base pick them off.
True.
Because the only attack what attacks them, right?
I'm looking at that. Okay, I'm just looking about attacking. Right now, I'm just talking about movement. And also the Banshees will try to avoid be within the same hex of other Banshees. Okay. Okay, there's definition of AMUs. Okay, each Banshee can fire one pulse of plasma venom per turn. There's no minimum delay between venom shots. A Banshee Steve may fire his venom the first time it's given its opportunity into a hex within four hexes of an armed mobile unit and prevented from condition number three, i.e. avoiding that. or succeed in doing so despite number three, the armed unit in question will be the target. The fire will be resolved immediately after the Banshee has moved. Venom also does 5 points of damage and automatically hits all its targets despite any modifiers, ships, etc. 360 firing arc, 30 range 30. The Banshee must have a line of sight to his target to accept it. If more than one valid target, one causing the Banshee to fire by closing or condition number three is available, the Banshee will fire the closest and two or more or equally close select one by random die. And all Banshees in a given hex entering a given hex will fire at a target selected by the first one of them until the target is destroyed. And it takes 12 points to kill a Banshee. Wow. Banshees have a small target modifier of 20 ECM out ranges of 5 or more. No modifier ranges from 0 to 4. Fighters with weaker scanners, 20 points at all ranges. So you don't want to use a fighter. Confirm. Provides proper balance, die roll shift. Ooh. Banshees have 51 points of ECM for use against all seeking weapons of the range to the guiding unit. Banshees will not all. Will not detonate automatic mines. They will not be harmed by mine explosions. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, I was concerned that was rain. Because I got my windows open, if you haven't noticed. Mm-hmm. Well, they can breathe, too. Yeah, that's to breathe. When Banshee reaches the base or other target, it would immediately cause 50 points of damage, scored as the impact of a seeking weapon, and then die. If several arrive simultaneously, they will resolve damage one at a time. The base is destroyed by the given entity. Others will arrive at the same time. Resolve later will breed. The entities will actually destroy the base and cannot breed, regardless of the amount of damage it actually used to destroy the base. When the base is destroyed, it would not explode. It's simply been reduced to hollow, lifeless hulk that Banshee can use for breeding purpose. Breeding is instantaneous, and the arrival of next Banshees and releases. What? Okay. I had to reread that and make sure I understood what exactly it said. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Oh! I thought it was really nasty. But, bringing us into tandem with the arrival of the next Banshee and releases 72 additional Banshees total. Not from each breeding Banshee, and ends the scenario. All surviving and newborn Banshees then organize themselves into one or more hordes and go seeking some other target. The player cannot destroy its own target unit, since the wreckage left by the Banshees will be used for breeding anyway. Wow. An arm mobile unit of size class 4 or large, which loses enough weapons or power to no longer qualify as such as AMU, will be considered a valid breeding target by the Banshee. The Banshees cannot breed in PF Hulk, which made PF the defense choice against this threat. Okay. So nasty. That is, wow.
I thought it would be a good one for like a campaign.
Oh yeah, to me, some of
And then
the
suddenly the players didn't care about fighting each other anymore.
wow. Oh jeez, this could be a nasty little sucker. Because what you have is one hex, which has a banshee horde. And then, even they'll breed, and as part of the campaign, so you have to kill them as part of the campaign to make sure they don't continue to breed.
Yeah, that's why I said that would be a good one for a campaign.
Oh yeah. Now you got to be
I guess, you know, what'd be
careful.
even worse is if you're defending your base and one of your opponents shows up and decides that they don't want your base there anymore. And
Well,
they help
yeah.
the Banshees.
Oh, jeez. I'm just imagining in a campaign where you have a damaged ship heading to a base, and the Banshees just show up, and the ship needs to be repaired. It's so damaged. They can just make it there, or maybe be towed there, but it's barely enough to be considered an AMU. But during the fight, they knock it down enough so it's no longer an AMU, and now it's a target. So,
Well, the flip side of that is what mechanic would bring them into the game,
right.
into the campaign at that particular moment.
Right.
So, but yeah.
Look at okay, 'cause I was wondering if, 'cause obviously the scenario said they're gonna breed a mobile, well. A man-made unit. Sorry. Yeah, let's say this man-made, whatever. Doesn't have to be man. It could be a Gorn. It could be,
Yeah, a fleet unit. Got it.
yeah, a Lyran. Holy cow! Warriors are killing the Red Sox now, man. Yeah, Campbell got killed. I'm surprised they put him in.
Okay.
That's. Okay, I think that's good enough. The Orioles are winning 9-3 at the top of the 10th, and
Oh,
they
yeah, they're
still
crushing.
have Campbell in the game. I don't know why. Oh, I'm surprised. Sorry.
Maybe they just don't feel like slowing it down any. I don't know. Who knows what their thought process is?
Yeah. Don't know. Tactics. The defending units will have to do two things at once. First, keep the Banshees away by getting in their way, right? Because they're going to be run away. They're trying to stay outside of range four of any mobile unit. And second, you run them down and kill them. One key tactic is to allow a very carefully determined number of Banshees to leak, quote unquote, through defenses each turn, so the base can use its weapons to kill them. Avoid sending a unit into a head-on confrontation with a lot of Banshees as they all fire and cave in the front shield. You can have units fire at the Banshee to provoke their fire, allowing other units to get closer and fire them, but the provoking units must either be small ones you can afford to lose shuttles, or large ones that can withstand the damage. Don't try. There was a large group of Banshees. Yep. Yeah. The designer notes was mentioned that this monster was. They wanted to design a monster. Can you not do that? That's about that was well suited for PFs. And I say yes, especially was this one, that the ARM mobile unit size class 4 or larger, which loses enough weapons, basically can be a target. So that if you lose a PF size class 5, I think, in which case it will never be a target.
Yeah, they'll ignore it.
Right. Wow. No, ESGs will not damage Banshees as they are plasma-based creatures.
Oh, sucks to be the Lyrans.
Yeah. ESGs are completely pointless. Don't the Lyrans also have almost every ship? Yeah, almost every ship can have PFs with them.
What is it? Damn near when they hit a certain point in the general war, yeah. But they have, they basically have tractor links that are specifically purpose built for carrying PFs with them.
Right, mech links.
As many tenders, if they're not tenders to start with.
Yeah, they're called casual tenders. Casual tenders.
But they're not considered part of the BPV, so they're extra.
Right. Sorry, I have to have him along for a little bit because he's a big pain. What? Now he's trying to get behind me. Here, want to get behind me? There. Now he's behind me. We should be good. But anyway, yeah. Okay. I'm just thinking about this for a moment, which is making sure that the Banshees won't be outside of range 4, because they want to be outside of range 4. It says here, if a Banshee is within 4 hex, okay, number one, which is condition number one, if a Banshee is within 4 hex of an armed unit, you will attempt to evade that unit. While the original does not violate condition number 3 below it, unless it's impossible to avoid doing so, which is performing number 2, will not volunteer enter within 4 hexes of basically an AMU. It might be forced to, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, yeah, that's the tough part, which is. I'm looking. Attacks. First time in a given unit that tries to move into a hex more within 4 hexes of a mobile. And it's prevented from doing so by number 3, or succeeds in doing so despite number 3. The question will be the target. Okay. So basically, if you force it to be within range 4 of that Banshee, it will fire at you. That the unit that was within range 4. Makes sense. Okay. Okay. Just looking at the victory conditions, because the thing is, with the monster scenarios, the victory conditions can be so varied. And this one is basically how much of the defending forces have been destroyed. If it's only 20%, then the side of victory, assuming that you destroy the Banshees. And the base survive, because the base has to survive. Obviously, if the base doesn't, it's automatic disaster failure. Plain and simple. If the Banshee succeeds in breeding, the player loses the scenario. As they say, duh. I agree that you really need to play with its PFs, and it would be a great monster for campaigns, especially, I think, later in the campaign, which is, I think, fits this scenario beautifully, because it's based on Y182 through 86, and this is late in the general war, so having it late in a campaign after people built up their forces, built up their bases and so forth, all of a sudden,
or after they've had them torn down and destroyed and crippled.
Yep. Oh, which means it might be best for the middle of the scenario, after people have basically established themselves. Because it depends upon the kind of campaign. If you have a campaign which starts with borders, and then you go from that, or if you have, like, Garen's, I think, Void War campaign, which basically you start with a home planet, and people are all over the map strategically, so that the idea is you build out from your home planet, get more eeps based on planets and star systems and whatever, that you kind of control that territory, and then at some point, obviously, you're in conflict with your opponent, with other players. And before that, maybe it's just some monsters, and you have to build it up, at that point. In which case, this would be good after those conflicts has started between the different empires at that point, and throw in a horde of banshees to someplace as a monster scenario or monster encounter. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Let me see if there's... Oh, is this one the same thing? Ba, ba, ba. Ah, okay. Another scenario with the Banshee, it's called Death of a Caravan. The Genoids have been in space a long time. As obvious from their adaptation to the living conditions, no one knows why they left the planet to become wanderers, or why they hide and keep their own numbers small. One theory is that they are refugees from some long-forgotten war. This theory is supported by the interaction of their weapons system with some of the breeds of so-called monsters that have invaded known space. An example occurred in Y-24 when a small Jindarian caravan, the names were never known, was observed under attack by banshees.
Okay. Yay. Huh.
Love this. Historical outcome of this scenario. The outcome was never clear. If one of the Jindarian ships survived, no one saw it. But then no one ever could be sure they had seen them at all.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
Well, that's the whole idea of the Zendarians and the rock ships, is that in theory they could just not move, and people go, oh, it's just another asteroid, you know.
Yep, we'll just be sitting here quietly while you like get destroyed.
We'll
laugh. We'll loot your wreck later.
Ooh. Vanished into the void. And this one, but one, another with banshees. And then the post revolt. After the purging of the Tholians in the Tholian home galaxy, the Centaurians began organized expedition to follow the fugitives that fled from the neighboring galaxies. The Nest of Monarch Butterflies. Interesting name. Was the core of one of the first extragalactic excursions undertaken by the Centaurians, months, perhaps years, into the void. The Nest of the Monarch Butterflies Task Force was set upon by a pack of banshees, which had not been detected by the Nest of Monarch Butterflies sensor. This is a story. This is not a happy one. Wow.
Well, the Tholians would probably like to hear it.
I'll agree. We'll start with 48 banshees. Set up near 4230. Place three banshees at 4230. And then three more in adjacent hex. And then place additional three next to the existing stack. Continue doing so until all the banshees have been placed. Wow. Let's read the historical outcome real quick. The Centaurians attempted to keep their voice compact to allow overlapping defensive fire, but could not keep a care of banshees, eventually impacting two of the frigates, leaving them lifeless hulks. Oh boy. The cruiser was destroyed by venom blasts. Its explosion devastated the freighters it was guarding. The Nest ship finally fell to a sextet of banshees that could not be destroyed fast enough. The Mountain of Green was the only ship to escape the encounter. It was able to locate another hive ship task force and join up with it to continue the Milky Way galaxy. Yikes. Damn. Nasty little buggers.
Well, anyway, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. No one else is here, right? Just want to make sure. I think with that, we'll wrap it up for the evening. Anything you want to advertise?
Yeah, Gamers of Summer's coming up, Labor Day weekend. It's only one summer away. Right on the end of it.
That is true. So, that is true.
Want something run there? Maybe it would be a good idea to let me know.
Yep, as soon as possible.
There's that. I have something to talk about. Maybe if you want to, for a few seconds after we're done. But
sure.
But yeah, other than that, I just got the Gamers of Summer thing coming up. We're still waiting for the SFB listing. Hint, hint. And then that's kind of it.
Okay. Oh, yeah, have a good night.
Thanks. I'll be right here.
So, had to talk about the nice Steam Deck. Nice little box. I heard it's very popular and definitely for. I have bought some Steam games. I want to check with it and see how it is. Actually, the one is. Ah, darn it. Basically you control robots in the spaceship. It's kind of neat. I think I'll see if I can play that one on the Steam Deck using the controllers. I'm not sure if it's available or not. I'll have to wait and see. I mean, if it has the integration with the controller. And of course we'll talk about the Banshees, which are nasty little buggers. And as it was pointed out, you need lots of small ships, and they are nasty little buggers. Because I think what makes them really bad is the target modifier, 20 ECM outside of range 4. And Banshees have 51 points ECM to use against all sneaking weapons, regardless of the range to the guiding unit. Wow. Nasty. Well, anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.